This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
In 1 hour, at 1 o'clock on Grant and Danny, Dave Jagler, one of the voices of Nationals baseball, right here on 106.7 The Fan, will join us with the latest from West Palm Beach. Max Scherzer made his debut this spring over the weekend. The Nats continuing action today with a more formidable lineup, including Trey Turner batting leadoff and Adam Eaton playing right field. Several regulars going to get their first spring action of the Grapefruit Leagues. We'll talk to Jags about that at 1 o'clock today, so Nats fans, rejoice. It is baseball time again. But right now, let's get to your Beltway Blitz, covering three teams in town in one segment. We will start you off on the ice. Rob Carlin of NBC Sports Washington, there is a lot of ground to cover. So let's start with this. Saturday, worst loss of the season. Sunday, most important win of the season. Juxtapose those two things. The Devils, the Pens game back-to-back. Did they find themselves, or was it just a win and we got to wait and see here?
We'll find out tomorrow. I mean, to build off of your hype about baseball season and Max Scherzer, you're only as good as your next day's starter. So if they come out and lay an egg against Winnipeg, the problems are still there. If they build off of what was not a complete 60-minute game, but as close as they've had in 2 months, well, then, yeah, maybe you start thinking, okay, they got through the worst part of the season, and now they're starting to dig themselves out of a pretty gigantic hole they put themselves in. But it's all going to be on what kind of momentum they build off of, because that was a really quality win over a Pittsburgh team that, other than the two games preceding it, had been surging for a month and a half. So, plus, you get Brendan Dillon punching Tane Malkin in the head repeatedly. So everyone kind of comes out of that just feeling good about what they saw.
Uncle Rob, Ilya Kovalchuk is a Washington Capital. Educate people on this. I mean, they probably remember him from the mid-2000s, you know, in Atlanta and New Jersey. Huge gap where he wasn't playing in the NHL. Then he comes back. What should people expect from the 36-year-old?
I mean, they've got 1,100 goals combined between the Kovey and Ovi show now. He's got 442 career goals. He's been one of the great little stories in hockey because he's come back and he's been happy and he's been motivated in Montreal. And everyone thought, you know, it's funny because everyone thought when they signed him, why would they do it? And then when he started producing with 13 points in 22 games, everyone said, well, now they should trade him. And then as he continued producing, everyone was like, well, maybe they just keep him and help start building around him. So I think it was, you know, a great move. Once again, just like Brendan Dillon, they found a GM who wanted to reward a veteran player and send him someplace where he has a legitimate shot at winning a Stanley Cup. And Montreal, like San Jose, is eating 50% of the salary. So the Caps' hands are tied because of the salary cap, but they've made two quality moves to make themselves better. And I'm no coach, but if it was me, I'd put Kovalchuk on the right side of the third line with Ponick on the left side, see if he can get some offense out of him because he's got a goal scorer now, and drop Haglund down. He's been really good, not a demotion, but he potentially could help generate some offense from that fourth line, which has been really good at puck possession and not allowing goals. But maybe they can get more offense that way. So I just think they're a more complete team today.
Interesting, because I was thinking third line as well, but basically that you'd replace Ponick, and he would be the odd man out, getting scratched a little bit more, maybe some fourth line time, because he just hasn't earned the opportunity that, say, Haglund probably has. I like your idea that maybe you bring more out of Ponick offensively, but what do you think they actually do? That's what you would do. How do you see this playing out?
I'm going to be very curious to see what they do at practice tomorrow, because, again, I don't look at Ponick as a fourth-line grinder type who's going to help with Hathaway and Dowd, who just work and work and work and
agreed,
work.
Agreed, but he's not also not a third-line contributor type right now either.
Right now, but that they brought him in to be that, and they brought him in based off of success he's had even playing top-line minutes, granted years ago in Chicago, but they thought they could get a 15, and at best-case scenario, 15 to 20 goal scorer this year, and it hasn't happened. So, you know, look, I guess you could bench him. I don't think Brendan Leipzig has done anything to deserve more playing time other than he's been on an effective line. But he hasn't really done enough for me to generate or to validate more playing time. So I'm just looking at, to me, the most complete look is Hagelin on that fourth line to maybe help with them. What I'm hoping for is that those two moves help generate more offense in those two lines. And I think that's the best way to do it. But again, I can't even skate, much less coach. So I'll be very curious to see what they do tomorrow at practice.
Uncle Rob, Alex Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer of all time, just based on what's happening in the league around him. Agree or disagree with that sentiment?
That he's the best goal scorer of all time?
Correct.
Yeah, with what the game is today, yes. I think he's the greatest pure goal scorer of all time.
Rob Carlin, NBC Sports Washington. Thank you, buddy. Much appreciated. As always, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, let's move along, covering the teams you care about on the Beltway Blitz. The D.C. Defenders played Game 3 of their season. They were 2-0. They went out to Los Angeles to play the 0-2 Wildcats.
This was supposed to be a layup, right? Fish in the barrel?
Slapped around as an underdog. 8.5-point dogs. The L.A. Wildcats, 39-9 winners yesterday, quarterbacked by Josh Johnson. Former Redskin.
No, really?
Yeah, 440 days ago he was starting for the Redskins. Yesterday he was starting for the Wildcats. Jake Russell covers the Defenders for the Washington Post. Jake, what happened? They played two home games. They were unbelievable. And then yesterday, seemed like everything fell apart.
I don't know if it was the 2,700-mile travel they had to deal with or playing above 50 degrees, but what they performed out there last night, like, was just not acceptable. It was something that I don't think anybody in the league expected. They were outclassed in every way, shape, and form by a team that was previously 0-2, and I think it's a kind of brings them back down to reality a little bit, makes them have to look at themselves in the mirror and figure out what they need to do going forward.
Is this one of those, oh my God, we showed some of the cracks and flaws, or is this a weird one-off because they've never been on the road before?
I mean, the Defenders better hope it's a one-off or else it's going to be a rough rest of the season. I think it was also kind of the Wildcats' time to actually shine. They showed a lot of improvement last week against the Dallas Renegades, losing in basically the final minute and a half last week. And the trash talk between both teams, it was that of basically division rivals, not teams that are across the country from each other. So I think the Wildcats took a lot of offense to the fact that the Defenders had so much shine on them and so much hype going into the game. They want to show, hey, we're actually in this league too, and boy, did they show it.
Cardale Jones went from maybe favorite for the MVP to throwing four interceptions in a disaster. I mean, how much of yesterday do you pin on him? He basically took the blame after the game, saying he gave the team no chance.
I put a good percentage on him, but another percentage I would put is basically 50 on the run game. They try to establish it early on, but the running game has not helped them at all this season. Most of their yards yesterday came in essentially garbage time in the fourth quarter. They need to fix that for next week and going ahead, but Cardale did not look good in any way, shape, or form yesterday.
Is the lack of practice time, is that something that we're just going to see every once in a while? I mean, because that's my theory when I look up and see some out-of-whack scores maybe in the third week is just – these teams haven't had time to hit the ground running, so maybe somebody that looked good in week one won't look as good in a couple weeks, and somebody that looked like they couldn't manage a forward pass will all of a sudden start to play better. Is that a factor to you?
I think a good part of it is what EB would say would be the do theory and kind of regressing to the mean. I think the start that they had was a little bit unsustainable. Yesterday he just brought them back to reality, and I think it's just, like I said earlier, the Wildcats' time to just show, you know, we're – better than everyone thinks, and the Defenders caught him at a really bad time.
Jake Russell talking XFL football in our Beltway Blitz. Lastly, broadly, you know, kind of nationally here, how do we feel about the XFL after 3 weeks? The quality of the play, what people are saying, attendance. St. Louis was hopping yesterday. TV ratings, what do we know now?
I think that 29,000 in St. Louis yesterday is a very good sign. The Seattle had 29,000 last week as well, and it dropped to about 22,000, but I think the XFL is very pleased, if I had to guess. They're very pleased with the numbers they have for attendance and the numbers they have for television. And The thing about it is people should just really stop comparing it to the NFL because they're not the same thing and they're not meant to be the same thing. Right now, the XFL, I think, is very pleased, and they're just trying to build themselves up to what they want to be, not to any NFL standards. And I think it's just a great product for fans of football to just watch it and basically tide over until the NFL draft starts in April.
Jake, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Enjoy the week.
All right, thanks. You too, guys.
Talk soon, man. Let's talk Nats, please, Tommy. Our buddy Todd Divas, NBC Sports Washington, joins us to talk about those Nationals. Todd, Max Scherzer, one start in spring training in the books. How did he look? And how confident are we that he's still going to be Max Scherzer here battling Father Time and a couple injuries from last year?
Yeah, he looked good. I mean, not surprisingly, his velocity was 92, 95, as much as we can count on the radar gun that's in West Palm Beach. He used a variety of pitches. He got a strikeout on a curveball that backed up on him a little bit, but it was still good enough to get a strikeout. The complication, of course, is Houston didn't play any of their guys, which when asked about it afterwards, Scherzer said he would have much preferred to face the Jose Altuves and Alex Bregmans and those guys in his first outing. As far as Father Time, this is why the contract's worked out so well, right? Because he's been able to hold off Father Time for so long. And he had some specific ideas as to what was happening with his neck and back last year, what was causing that. And I'm actually writing about that this week. So thanks, Danny.
Mm. Todd Divas with us, my team's app at NBCSportsWashington.com. Hey, Todd, give me a gold, silver, and bronze. 1, 2, and 3. Names of the most interest to you at camp, like best stories of the players as far as what they'll end up meaning in 2020.
Gold, silver, and bronze. Well, I think for the gold, I'll actually start with Starlin Castro. I think he's going to hit third a lot. I think that may be surprising to some folks. When Howie Kendrick plays, he'll probably hit third. But the Nationals think what he did from basically July 1st on last year is not an aberration. They think that's who he is. And if it is who he is, then he's going to probably hit 30 home runs while playing second base. We'll see if his kind of pull and loft strategy is transferable to an entire year here. But if you made something work in Miami, seemingly you can make it work here. Silver, I would say Yan Gomes. I think he's going to play a lot, quite a bit more than Kurt Suzuki, certainly at the start of the season. And bronze, you know, I guess I'll pick Will Harris just because he's going to be so important and he's going to buy so much time for Daniel Hudson and Sean Doolittle. And also keep Davey away from using Wander Suero 76 times or 176 times, it felt like last year, which should be beneficial for everybody in the bullpen.
Todd, thank you, buddy. We'll see you down there in a couple weeks.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, pal.
Much appreciate the insight. There's Todd Divas to round out your Blitz. Rob, Todd, Jake on the Capitals, the Nationals, and the XFL's DC Defenders. We're Grant and Danny. Next, right here on The Fan, Doug Williams is no longer acting in the front office in a general manager type role for the Redskins. He's kind of a player liaison and a mentor of sorts, but he's still doing a lot of interviews, and he said something about Dwayne Haskins on a national interview over the weekend that'll put your radar up just a little bit. The antenna goes up, and you go, wait, what? We'll tell you about that next on The Fan. In about 27 minutes at 12:45, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to comedian Jim Jeffries at MGM National Harbor. His show is on March 6th. Tickets are on sale now. Details are available at thefandc.com. If you want to win those tickets, you've got to be listening at 12:45.
Heavy buy recommendation on Jim Jeffries. He is hilarious.
Very, very funny.
Really good.
I'd love to see him live. As you know, I'm big into the pretty much anything at the MGM National Harbor's facility is great because that theater, there's no such thing as a bad seat. Like, you buy tickets to some stand-up shows or concerts especially, and you sit in a certain spot, and it's an awful experience. I don't think there's such a thing as being in a spot anywhere that they have available to you there that's not perfect.
Yeah, there. So when I opened up for Lisa Lampanelli at the, I think it was the Lincoln Theater, it's a big, beautiful facility. It's just awesome. But if you're like Johnny Backrow, everyone else is laughing for like 3 or 4 seconds before the sound actually gets to you. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not that great experience. But at MGM, it's you're right. It's just the way it's designed. It's brilliantly done. And he's excellent.
Although I have had really good experiences watching stand-up comedy at big venues. at DAR Constitution Hall. Would you consider that to be large?
That's pretty big. I think that, just, I don't know top head. I think it's like 3,000.
I saw Aziz there several months ago.
He's got so much energy that he fills that place.
He destroyed. That was a blast. I love that place. I've also seen great concerts there as well. That's a really, really neat venue downtown. But anyway, make sure you're listening at 12:45 if you want those tickets. Speaking of listening, Doug Williams was on SiriusXM's NFL channel at the Combine yesterday, and he was asked about Dwayne Haskins. And if you listen to his answer, you might have a similar takeaway to what I did and Danny did when we heard it. This is Doug Williams via SiriusXM's NFL radio.
The games he played, you know, he played decently, but I think the last game of the season, the way he was playing that last game is the way we want to see Dwayne Haskins play this game, because he got talent. And he got hurt. He hurt his ankle, got rolled up, but he had thrown like two TD passes. He was like 12 for 15. And, you know, it gave you some hope that this is where he's going to start off. And since that time, the kid had been where he's supposed to be, I think, in the building, working out on his own, trying to find out what's going on. And like I told him and I talk, I tell him all the time, I'm not your coach. I just try to tell him what he has to do to get him out of that mentality that I can just gallivant all over the place on the off season, when really you need to be here trying to find out what I need to do for the season.
The last part of that answer makes you go, wait, what? So you go back through it, and we can kind of start and stop it and play through it, but his initial point is so correct. The way that Haskins played against the Giants was uplifting and confidence-inducing. He was inspired on the field, and he was lifting up everyone around him. He was coming off that Eagles game where something clicked. Mm-hmm. They lost to the Eagles 37-27. The game was actually closer than that. I think there was a turnover on the last play and a touchdown. But it was basically like a 30-27 shootout. Haskins threw for 260 and a couple touchdowns. Had a quarterback rating of 121 when he never had one, basically above 85 before that. He comes out of that game with a full prep for the New York Giants, who were not as good as the Eagles, obviously. And the Redskins scored 35 points in that game. Now, the heavy lifting may have been done after he left by Case Keenum, but his start to that game, he played the whole first half and got hurt on the first play of the second half.
That's right.
He was 12 of 15 for 133 yards and two touchdowns in basically two quarters of football. Extrapolate that out against that defense, that's 24 of 30 for 266 and four touchdowns. We'd still be talking about that game.
Yeah, he was having a day, and he played really well against Philadelphia, as you said before. He started to see the corner getting turned. So Doug Williams absolutely referenced that. So this isn't just some bass session here.
No.
It's or bass fishing session either, to be clear.
Bass Pro ESPN2 on Saturday afternoon. Let's go catch a cod.
Yeah, or it's not catch a bass, the old NES game, which was actually really, really terrible. But the point of the dude's story is he started to play well, and that's kind of what was the center. Said, this is what we want to see. You take the last part, and this is kind of where I wanted to hit, that Doug Williams says, I keep telling him, you've got to do X, Y, and Z. You got to be at the building, be at the facility. And that doesn't sound crazy, but 2 weeks ago, he said something really similar at the podium, as if to say, this is a running conversation. This is a bit of a tug of war that
what
we're having with young
kids. What did he say 2 weeks ago?
He's got to stay at the facility until they run him out of the building.
Right. That was kind of his message to him was, basically, he needs to be a film rat. He needs to be the guy that studies all the time. So you have that a couple weeks ago. And then this comment yesterday, which was, he says, basically, I'm trying to get him out of a mentality. I would say that that infers that he has a mentality. No? Get him out of that mentality that I can gallivant around all offseason or whatever it was that he was saying. Let's play the clip again. Just give me the back half of this, if you would, Thom. But he says, he gives him credit for the record.
Yes.
He says he's doing the right things this offseason. It's good to see. But I'm trying to get him out of a mentality, meaning he has a mentality,
mm-hmm.
where he thinks he can gallivant around all offseason and basically not put in the work. That's kind of worrisome. You draft a guy at 15, you normally don't really have to deal with that. It's kind of known what you can and can't do and the work you have to put in. And again, this is not me claiming this. This is not Danny saying this. This is not some fan on some blog. This is Doug Williams, who was a high-ranking front office executive last year, who's basically been demoted now into being a player mentor at this point, but is spending a lot of time in the building, was a Super Bowl champion, and is a guy who knows the quarterback position.
The kid had been where he's supposed to be, I think, in the building, working out on his own, trying to find out what's going on. And like I told him, him and I talk, I try not to, I tell him all the time, I'm not your coach. I just try to tell him what he has to do to get him out of that mentality that I can just gallivant all over the place on the off season, when really you need to be here trying to find out what I need to do for the season.
When really you need to be here. Get him out of a mentality where I guess he's not thinking that he needs to be there. Now, again, to it sounds like his credit, for the sake of the conversation, Doug Williams at the beginning of that cut says he's doing the right things now. Like
right.
He is in the building. That's great. But he also says he's working to get him out of a mentality that, in my opinion, is normally first-round quarterbacks don't have anyway.
And this isn't some, you know, Cowherdian thing because he sees one snippet of something and makes a grandiose, you know, statement about it, or a Chris Russell ping-pong phenomenon. Okay, I'm not saying you shouldn't go to a Wizards game. You should be allowed to go to a Wizards game. I'm not saying you shouldn't be able to film a YouTube video for GQ, right? Fine, do what you want. But this is someone within the organization pulling back the curtain a little bit and saying, these are the conversations that we're having. And then in context of a couple weeks ago, that's number one. Number two, this isn't the, we have to tell him you got to go home and get some rest. We have to tell him shut the film off. There's such thing as overthinking. We have to tell him, dude, you've already put enough work today. Let your body recover, right?
Right.
You could hear about a quarterback at this stage who's so hungry and so thirsty for knowledge and so thirsty for the amount of reps that he's exhausting himself, right? That he's just a film nerd. This sounds like, hey, we're trying to steer him in this general direction, and it's a slow process and it's happening, but it's a constant battle. Yes?
Here's how I want to phrase this. Something or nothing. Is this something or is this nothing, this Doug Williams comment? And by the way, it seems like every time Doug Williams talks, something like this comes out of it, for the record, where we go, I don't love that. And the Redskins basically have to play some defense. Like, if I'm Ron Rivera, I don't know if I'm saying this to Doug Williams, who's a legend with the Redskins, but I'm probably calling someone into my office, whether it's Dan or somebody else, and I'm going, hey.
Can we stop this?
Why is he always doing interviews again? Because now I'm cleaning up more mess at the Combine where people are going to ask me about this quote where Doug Williams said, I need to get him out of that mentality that I can gallivant all over the place on the offseason when you need to be here. Something or nothing. 800-636-1067 is the number, 800-636-1067. He is inferring that they are trying to improve Dwayne Haskins' work ethic. This is something that we heard a lot from the previous coaching staff, Jay Gruden and other folks, saying he does not work as hard as he needs to. And we kind of thought we were past that. It seemed like he'd turn a corner. When he became the starter, by all accounts, he started grinding, and you could just tell by the play. It seemed like he was doing all the prep and research necessary to figure out how to play quarterback in this league. And maybe Doug Williams is saying he's doing what he needs to do. But that comment, it just sticks out. I'm trying to tell him, basically, that you can't do whatever you want to do all offseason.
Yeah, it's a constant struggle. It's a constant message I'm sending.
You shouldn't have to do that. How many quarterbacks that get drafted in the first half of the first round are dealing with that constant messaging? We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. At the end of next segment, just before the top of the hour in our 12:45 segment, we're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to see comedian Jim Jefferies at MGM National Harbor. Make sure you're listening if you want to win those tickets. We'll give you more instructions on how to do that next segment. But welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. Dave Jagler, who calls Nats games right here on The Fan and on the Nationals Radio Network, will be with us at 1 o'clock with the latest from spring training. But we're talking right now about the comments of Doug Williams on Dwayne Haskins. Look, we pride ourselves on this show, contrary perhaps to belief, to talking about the things that are fair to these players and to talking about the things that matter. There are probably more of them at the quarterback position where you've got to be a CEO of an outfit than there are at the wide receiver or the running back or the defensive back position. We're not going to spend time talking about the cars that a quarterback buys or whether or not they're at a basketball game. We don't care about that.
Right.
It's not important. It's Cowherdian, and we're not doing that. Here's what we will do, though. What does matter immensely is how hard does Dwayne Haskins work? How much film is he studying? Is he going to be the last guy to leave the building? Is he Matt Ryan, as Logan Paulson said when he sat in here?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he one of the other guys that he named, and we don't need to throw him under the bus, who's basically saying just didn't put in the work that was necessary. It is a huge tell at the QB position. There's a reason that there's some curiosity, not a concern, but some curiosity about Haskins. That part of his game was questioned and opined about, and the speculation was not great about it because of what Jay Gruden and others were saying when he was here.
There were leaks about this, right?
Yes.
There was a Les Carpenter story. There were others. Things came out. Now, I think a lot of that was a disservice to Dwayne Haskins. I think a lot of
I'm sure it was, but that's a different conversation.
And this is my point, that a lot of that was self-serving. A lot of that was trying to save some face when a coaching staff was on its way out. Doesn't mean it was all bogus, though. Doesn't mean it all wasn't true.
We had people coaching this kid saying, this is not what it looks like when a professional quarterback is preparing to play QB in the league,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That was out there last year. And now you've got a guy in the front office, in Doug Williams, who's saying, and the quote you're going to hear in this, and there are other times where he says he's doing more now. He's in the office more. That's great. That's good. That's progress. I think all of us agree it seems like he's come a long way and he's matured and hopefully he continues to. But one of the quotes that stands out is he says he's trying to get him out of a mentality where he can gallivate around all offseason. Why does he have that mentality to begin with? That is fairly alarming. This was Williams on Haskins.
The games he played, you know, he played decently, but I think the last game of the season, the way he was playing that last game is the way we want to see Dwayne Haskins play this game, because he got talent. And he got hurt. He hurt his ankle, got rolled up, but he had thrown like two TD passes. He was like 12 for 15. And, you know, it gave you some hope that this is where he's going to start off. And since that time, the kid had been where he's supposed to be, I think, in the building, working out on his own, trying to find out what's going on. And like I told him and I talk, I tell him all the time, I'm not your coach. I just try to tell him what he has to do to get him out of that mentality that I can just gallivant all over the place on the off season, when really you need to be here trying to find out what I need to do for the season.
I'm glad he's got Williams telling him those things,
yeah.
And hopefully he listens to him. We're asking you guys, is this something or is this nothing? 800-636-1067. I'm saying something because of what we heard from the last staff, you know, and because this is not brand new. If we just saw all the games earlier and we never heard anything about the work ethic and the non-on-field stuff before, and this is the first quote we've ever heard, I'm not even sure if we'd be talking about it right now. But because this was a major storyline, best and at worst maybe an issue last season,
mm-hmm.
there were stories in the Washington Post from sources within the building saying this has to change. It's definitely something for me. Doug Williams said it. It's not some random writer in Charlotte who talked to someone with Ron Rivera. This is Doug Williams, who's been around this guy for over a year now.
Right. So to me, it is something. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's over. It doesn't necessarily mean there's no chance. This can be a skill that you work on like anything else. This could be a skill just like footwork. It could be a skill like, where does the ball come out? You know, what time am I drop back? And, you know, what's my rhythm and timing on this? Learning how to work hard is absolutely something you can learn how to do. Learning what it takes is part of the acclimation process. Right now, this is this is something we can improve upon, right? He can do that. It sounds like he did as the season progressed. You saw the performance that was, you know, representative possibly of some extra work that was getting put in. So it's something where I go, I'm monitoring this. I'm watching for these stories now. My flag is up. I got a Google alert for it. Things that have to do with work ethic, applying himself, and making sure that he's in and around the facility doing everything he can.
So, and I agree that you can get better, and I think we've seen that.
Yeah.
Here's why I care so much, because we have, a fundamental disagreement from just talking about this for a year plus on how binary it actually is if a guy is a quarterback who's a CEO or they're not, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it is learned to be the dude who's first in, last out. I don't think that's something you improve. I don't think it is learned to be desperate for studying football and knowing everything you can about the game. I think that's a love and a passion you either have or you do not. The example I'll give you is you can get better at the little things your wife gets mad about and nitpicks you for and says, it drives me nuts that you leave your socks on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So for a little while, you focus on that. But by and large, at this point of our lives, we're going to end up with the socks are on the floor.
We've
been doing it for a while. And I view that way with quarterbacks. I think you either love this game so much that you are, this is a terrible comp, but I'll hop to another sport. Brooks Like in hockey, the Capitals. I remember he used to go on with the Junkies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He would go home at night and he'd watch every other NHL game. He would talk about like the other games and the Sidney Crosby goal. He loved hockey. He cared so much about hockey. You either have that or you don't. Dwayne Haskins, in an interview we did with him at training camp, said he doesn't love football like that. And we asked him, are you playing Madden? Are you watching games? I don't think that's just all of a sudden something that you change about your personality or you love. See what I'm saying?
I do get
And that's
that.
Why it's interesting to me, and it's I'm curious about it. Let's go to Kevin and Burke on Grant and Danny. Kevin, how are you?
Good, Grant, Danny. I think it's even worse. If you listen to Doug Williams, he's a company man, first of all. And what he said was, he's in the building doing this and doing that, I think. He says that right after that line. He says, I think, which tells you he doesn't even know. And you got a hometown kid with a pocket full of money. When does that wear off, you know? And I think that's a big part of why he doesn't love football like he said he does. But listen to Doug closely, and he says, I think. So I don't even think he even knows.
He may not. I mean, look, I'm certainly not going to make a grandiose decision about a player who's going to be here potentially for 10 more years based on Doug Williams' opinion. No disrespect to him, but there's a reason that he's in the role he's in now and not in the front office. What I am saying, though, Danny, is he's around this guy, and if he's saying, I'm just trying to strip this quote away to basically what it means. And
yes,
what it meant was he needs to understand how hard he's got to work, and he doesn't really get that yet, and I'm trying to drive that home.
So it's like our program director telling you, Grant, we have to break on time. Grant, we have to break on time. And it's still the conversation however many weeks and months in. It becomes a theme.
I think it's even bigger than that. That's a mechanical thing. To break down the analogy a little bit, to me, the breaking on time is something on the field of like a decision you're making. To me, this is even before you get to that. Before you get to try to break on time and actually run a show correctly, this is a, hey, Grant, you can't just show up at 10 on the dot and be gone at 2 and not ever think about your show again until 10 the next day.
Mm-hmm.
There is an amount of prep that goes into it. There is a rundown. There is reading and researching.
And what he's telling
you, trying to say, do that stuff.
Yeah, and what he's telling us, Doug Williams, is a couple times now, again, one public comments, one an interview on SiriusXM, these are the conversations I'm having with the player. So unless he's lying about those conversations or he's just trying to fill some time during an interview, he's telling us, this is what I'm telling Dwayne Haskins.
End of next segment. We've got those tickets to see Jim Jeffries. Right now we're talking Dwayne Haskins. Doug Williams had a comment where he says he's trying to harp to the quarterback on the fact that he's got to get him out of a mentality where he's thinking he can gallivant all over the place on the offseason when you need to be here, meaning Redskins Park. Your thoughts on that, something or nothing. 800-636-1067. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. It's officially hand size season. NFL Combine, one of the first measurements they do is the size of the hands. And I just got a tweet from someone worried about Joe Burrow because his hands are only 9 inches long.
This is the ultimate.
It's great.
We're so starved for any details about anybody that we're going to wring our hands, no pun, over hand sizes. Well, this guy's 9 3/4. That means, well, his stats were actually pretty crappy, so it doesn't mean he's better than Joe Burrow.
Now, there is something to hand size with quarterbacks because a lot of times the guys with the smaller hands, like Kirk Cousins, I guess, doesn't have big hands. And he is more likely to fumble when he gets hit from the blind side, trying to tuck the football and what have you. The bigger your hands, you kind of palm the basketball, so to speak, you can more easily like tuck the football. But I mean, E.J. Manuel had big hands. How'd that work out for him? You know, you kind of go through all the years. There's not really a great correlation in terms of hand size and the quality of the quarterback. Carson Wentz had pretty small hands. He's been pretty solid.
He's good. As long as you're above a minimum and you're not some sort of bizarre circus side act, I don't care about hand size.
You know who had really small hands compared to what you'd expect? It's like Cam Newton, who won an MVP award and played in a Super Bowl. I don't know if they're considered tiny. They're like 9 7/8, almost 10-inch hands. My point is, you think of him and Roethlisberger as these huge dudes. They had sub-10-inch hands. But it's that time of year again now where we're going to make decisions on Joe Burrow. We saw all those games, all those throws, all the things he did against Alabama.
Look at that perfect touch, but his hands are how long?
SEC defenses, but he doesn't have big hands.
Well, he escapes trouble, but his hands.
And before we get out of here in about 7 minutes of this segment, we will be giving away tickets to Jim Jeffries at MGM National Harbor. If you want those, make sure you're listening. We'll go back to the calls on Doug Williams saying that he's trying to drill into Dwayne Haskins the idea that he's got to be at Redskins Park and not gallivanting around all offseason. He did admit that he is doing more on his own and seems to be more engaged at the facility, which is great. I had mentioned, though, there was a comment that you and I had come back to a couple times last year about him not being like a what I would consider a football rat. He was going to watch every game. And most quarterbacks, like I use Cousins a lot because we not only had him on the show, but he was the last franchise QB the Redskins had. But you talk Colt McCoy or whoever. You go up to those guys and ask them, They watch the Thursday night game. They watch the Monday night game. They just, that's what they do. They watch football. Haskins admitted to us that's not really what he plans on being or doing. This was the comment I was referring to from when we caught up with him in Richmond, the one time we had him on the show.
You to relax away from football. You're on the sticks a lot, playing a little 2K.
Man, what is it? I like football, but not that much. Like when I get away from it, I want to get away from it. So when I get in the house, it's let's watch Netflix or you know, let's just listen to music or whatever it is. And of course I'll study and stuff like that, but I mean I don't even watch ESPN or nothing like that. Like I just got cable this summer.
That's crazy.
I didn't have a cable all college. So I
mean, so you as a football fan, you mean you don't watch a lot?
No, as a kid I did. But now, like, I watch and study so much, I don't even, like...
You need a break from it.
I don't even enjoy watching it like
that's
that.
That's work. So he admits to studying a lot, which mm-hmm. is good. But you could even hear it in my voice there in that interview.
You go, really?
I'm very like, surprised what? To hear the starting quarterback say, yeah, I don't really watch football. His quote was actually, I like it, but I don't like it that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting is all I'm saying. Not a problem, per se. Not a deal breaker in any way. But that and what you heard from Gruden and now from Doug Williams, something or nothing. That's the question. 800-636-1067 on Williams making it seem like he's working really hard to help Dwayne Haskins understand he's got to be at the facility. Well, if this is just Doug Williams saying something he shouldn't have said, okay, fine, no problem. But that's what we're trying to sort
that's
out.
That's the second time he's made reference to this sort of
pattern. And you pointed that out.
Right?
How many weeks ago?
2 weeks.
And what did he say then?
The first one was... Among other things, he's got to stay at the facility until they run him out of the building.
Let's go to David in D.C. on G&D. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Love the show. This is extremely alarming. I mean, going back to the point that you made, Grant, about binary CEO of an NFL team, I agree with you completely. And just everything that's kind of happened, you know, ever since we drafted him, not learning the playbook, there was a report that he was coming into the facility initially at 11 a.m. and just like... at just being very ill prepared, and these are all the precursors of Pro Bowl caliber quarterback down the line. Like I can't remember the last time where you know someone had this type of work at a quarterback position, had this type of work ethic, and then they just were able to flip the switch, and then you know they became great. There's tons of examples of those who you know kind of just floundered out of the league.
Yeah, I worry about the Thanks, switch buddy. Being flipped, David. Thank you. I think some of those things are overblown. Like. I promise you there hadn't been a day when things were starting at 8 where he wandered in at 11. Like, you would know about
that.
Sure,
he's not on Sue Craven's time.
Exactly. That's not a thing that's happening. And I understand your point is there's been all kinds of crazy speculation. But you also have to sift through this. Like, the last coaching staff, which is now gone, I give them credit because I haven't seen them bashing him since they've gone in their million directions.
That's a good point.
But they didn't necessarily want him drafted, and then they were the ones largely that were raising the eyebrows at some of the things he was doing. But now this is not that. This is Doug Williams, who's here and is largely responsible for mentoring him. Dave is in Oakton. Dale. Dale's in Oakton. What's up, Dale?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I don't really think this is a big deal. I kind of think that when I hear that quote from Williams, it kind of sounds like when he mentioned getting him out of that mentality, that he was just sort of referring to the reports from last year and maybe his mentality when he was coming into the season after he got drafted. But I think that, you know, it sounded positive, and I think that he's in a good place now, being here for a year under Williams. And, yeah, I'm just not that worried about it.
So I would buy what you're selling here if this was all past tense. But offseason doesn't refer to
That's right.
before you're here.
That's right.
Right? You're drafted, and before you're here, there's only so much you're allowed to do.
He's talking about now.
When he says that, just try to tell him he's what he has to do to get him out of the mentality that I can just gallivant all over the place on the offseason. This is your first offseason.
Right, there wasn't one a year ago.
Right.
Talking about before he showed up at training camp the first time. But he's saying the offseason, this is his first offseason.
Yeah. I mean, listen, these stories are a millionfold. You hear about all the guys all the time where they had all the talent in the world and they didn't realize you can't just eat McDonald's every day. So, you change your diet and you start doing the yoga. You start doing whatever it is to realize what you have to do to be a quality professional. Some guys could just show up and they're that great. For the most part, that's not the case. You can learn these sorts of things. So if Doug Williams' point is we're constantly working with him and it's starting to click and the light bulb's going off, okay, cool. We'll track that progress. But if it's this is the tug of war that we're constantly doing here to make sure he understands, then it tells you there's some pushback and it's an issue for them too.
Andre's in Manassas on Grant and Danny. What's up, Dre? How are you?
I'm doing well. Guys, this is definitely a problem, man. I mean, you know, do what you love if you never have to work a day in your life. You know, Bill Parcells used to say he wouldn't draft a guy if it was God, your country, your mom, and football. And this guy's putting Netflix ahead of football. So I do think it's a problem. And not just from, you know, learning the X and O's. My concern is from injuries. Is he doing what he needs to do for his body to, A, not get injured, and B, if and when it does get injured, to come back and come back stronger? So X's and O's are a big deal, but he's already got a couple of injuries. My concern with the X and O's would be addition to the injuries. But the good news is you have time. You need to let this guy play his entire year. Don't, you know, get a third quarterback. Let him play so you see 100%. So if this, when this offseason comes next year, you know exactly what you need to do, no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Dre, make no mistake. Nobody here is advocating that that shouldn't be the case, right? We're not saying that he shouldn't be the starter next year or that they should be bringing someone in. What we're saying, though, is to make one more leap. I mean, Ron Rivera's brand new and he's seeing all this for the first time like Scott Turner is. And if he's not in the facility every single day on his own, watching the film, doing everything he can individually, then that would be, I think, telling to them. I hope, if nothing else, he's changed his ways right now so that he can kind of win those guys over and they can go, damn,
we're impressed with Haskins, the kid. Exactly.
Man, he really gets it. 800-636-1067 if you want to weigh in on Haskins. Right now, caller number 10 at that same number, 800-636-1067. You're winning a pair of tickets to Jim Jeffries at MGM National Harbor on March 6th. Tickets are on sale now. Details at thefandc.com. More on what Doug Williams had to say in the NFL Combine. Also, what was a wacky weekend in the NHL. Some dude got pulled out of the crowd to play goalie. It actually went pretty well. Dave Jagler on the Nats at 1:30. All coming up on Grant and Dan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.